What's up, folks? How you doing? Welcome back. It's been a long, long time.
We took a little break.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, 2 weeks break. A month and a half, two months.
Kind of got away at us.
Yeah, we've been... old Johnny there has been in school and wrapping that up. And I've been busy, busy at the campground trying to get stuff sorted and permits in and blah, blah, blah. And get stuff ready for the food truck. And
We got a bunch of other projects on the go, and a film festival, and all kinds of bullshit.
Yeah, but yeah, I was trying to wrap up that documentary, The Strawberry Run. So if you're
listening to this, that will have already happened.
Yeah. But if you pay attention to our socials, that I'm going to release that probably sometime in the next couple of weeks on YouTube. But other than that, if you've been following us along the last month, I've announced a couple events. Firstly, Trash Bash is back. I've teamed up with Peter LeBlanc and my friend Lucy, and we're running Trash Bash the first time in 2 years. It's 2 years, I think.
Yep.
And so that is on May 6th, and Saturday, May 6th. It's a free community cleanup. You can come down. The county supplying all the cleanup materials. Just donate an hour or two of your time, and we're doing a kind of a centralized pickup. We have trucks going all through Marguerite to the beaches, roadside, riverside, all this sort of stuff. And we've got cleanups happening in Shetty Camp, Marguerite, and Port Hood.
We got some music happening.
And music afterwards. And,
it's my birthday.
And it's Canary's birthday. And he's DJing. Yeah. He's closing
out
the
party. We're going to have a little shuffle.
Yeah. So we got Buck Tingley playing blues. I'm trying to remember the artist, and it's escaping me right now. But
But check out the socials.
Yeah. And then we have the Butts and Boats Festival. Now, this is for those of you that like paddling and the kayaking, canoeing, paddleboarding, whatever, I wanted to do kind of like an early season event to kind of bring people of all disciplines and all experience levels together in Marguerite and paddle some of the rivers and showcase different routes that, you know, that we've been doing since I was a kid. But a lot of people don't really know that's available here. Here right on Cape Breton, and the first one is going to be based in Marguerite, and next year will probably be somewhere else on the island. And then we just announced our annual barbecue at the Bite House. That is going to be a basher. We're doing a big collab
July 1st
weekend. So Brian's in with Joey Martini from Halifax, who
love Joey.
Yeah, so
beauty,
they're doing, they did a collab burger last summer for a Lookout Tire, which is Brian's band's first show, and that burger was
amazing.
Ridiculous. And that's some of the events that are coming up this summer.
Today we've got Angelo Spinazzola on here. Angelo's bellows. Yeah, let's just jump right into it.
Roger that. Okay, we'll see you in the next one, folks. There is a next one coming. See ya.
Yeah, 1-2, 1-2. Okay,
I'm ready. Get on.
Cool. What are we talking about? Just let him go.
Are we talking about kayaking?
Oh,
come on. Let's not talk about kayaking. That's what I do, man. It's like everything's... How about we talk about...
Get right in there to Mike.
Angelo's Bellows.
Angelo's Bellows.
Willie Nelson.
I love that. Yeah.
What do you want to... Okay,
Angelo's Bellows. I heard you were doing some ice climbing.
Yeah. Well, we've been ice climbing now for about 20 years, myself and Mike Van.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, Ryan McDonald from CTV News picks up on it through a Facebook post, and everybody freaked out about this extreme adventurous guys on Kelly's Mountain, and cars were stopping, and people were tooting horns, and it was like, but... Really, we've been doing it for 20 years, and all of a sudden somebody picks it up from Facebook and puts it on television, and then all of a sudden it just went nuts. Everybody's all excited about the whole thing, but it's just something we do.
Yeah, that's pretty.
You know what I mean? It's no great. I didn't think it was, extreme adventure. Definitely not in my mind. You know, that's not that extreme. It's just that nobody's doing it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be pretty stressed out if I was doing it, but I get where people are coming from, but I thought it was super cool. I didn't know you guys did that.
Yeah, well, that's it. We don't profess to the world that we're climbing ice just because we're climbing in places that we may get kicked off of if we profess too much.
Kicked off?
No, not there. No, not there. But we wanted to climb at the causeway there where the ice is just before you come on to Cape Breton on the right. But they weren't very happy about that, so we didn't do it there.
That's yeah. fair. Yeah, yeah, that's fair.
That's like the start of like a mini documentary, you know?
Yeah. Right, well, yeah. I mean, the ice was nice, but it wasn't that nice. I mean, there's a lot more nice places on the Cape.
You just gotta get what you can get, I guess.
How'd you get into ice climbing?
Mike Vann. Mike had a rock wall called Get a Grip in Sydney.
Yeah.
Maybe 20 years ago or something. And Mike is a best pal of mine. And he asked me if I wanted to go try ice climbing because he was doing it. And I figured, yeah, I'll give it a go. I was nervous about it at first. I was shitting my pants, basically, trying it the first time. Yeah. It was the scariest thing, rappelling with spikes and axes and coming off of a 60-foot, 70-foot drop. Yeah, it freaked me out. But after a few times, all of a sudden, it just became good. You know, you're up on the ice. I remember up on Kelly's... it wasn't Kelly's. There was a waterfall in behind the ice. Oh, yeah, it was in... it was Ishkaban Falls. That's probably another place we shouldn't be, but anyway, we were. And we were climbing on Ishkaban Falls, and as we're picking our axes in, and the axes are popping through the ice, and you're seeing the waterfall on the behind the ice looking through it, we decided it was time to get off that ice, and we walked out of there. And the next day, we found out that somebody went through the ice, under the ice, and got stuck, and a bunch of guys went in. I think Vince Forrestal was one of them, and he actually saved his life and pulled him from under the ice out.
Wow. Was that the one 2 years ago?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and
okay.
We were up there, I think a day or two before that happened, we were actually climbing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Is that why they have all the signs there now that says you're not supposed to go there in the winter?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah, there is risk to anything we do, I mean.
I was up there the other day. I saw all those. Been a while since I've been to Ishkaban Falls.
But. Oh, ooh. Dinner's ready.
There's the dinner bell. Shall we stop and eat?
It's exciting.
So, Angela, why don't you kind of do a little intro for the people that might be listening and not know who's talking right now?
Okay. My name is Angelo Spinazzola, 53 years old.
Young.
Caucasian. Italian descent, half Italian. Half Scottish and French on my mother's side. We got Campbell, we got Degas. I started playing music professionally when I was young. When I was 15, 16, my brother and I started playing in bands, Carlo and I, and then we get into other bands with like Dave Mahalik, Gordy Sampson, Dave Burke, Ed Woodsworth, playing tunes all over the place, and then just playing music, making a living at it. And then I worked as an electrician. I went out west, and I did not like that. I did not like working for other people. Came back, and I started kayaking. I went on a double transatlantic on the Sorca. Went to Portugal and back.
Is it sailing?
Yeah, I sailed from Cape Breton, the Dobson Yacht Club in Coxeth, over to the Azores in Portugal.
Wow.
And back. So we went over there. There were six of us on crew on the schooner, and that was life-changing. That was the biggest life-changing moment of my life, bar none, of any event that ever happened, especially on an adventurous level.
Yeah.
That was freaky.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one pushed me as far as I could be pushed.
Did you get the tattoo?
Oh, is it a tattoo?
Well, it's like if you cross the Atlantic, you get I don't know what they call it, like a wheel?
Yeah, they're, yeah, that's right.
If you cross the Pacific, you get an anchor or vice versa, something like that.
Well, I am getting a tattoo from my neighbor, Kurt Yonder. Yeah. And that's kind of cool because I may just get two tattoos.
Fuck, you might as well just do the whole sleeve.
Go for two tattoos. Two tattoos. Yeah. So I might get it. I mean, I never really thought about it, but I want to get one of those old school diver's helmets and then an octopus tentacles down on the bottom of it. I already have it. He's designing it now and working on it.
So I think, now that I'm thinking about it, I think it's the anchor for the Atlantic because Albert Leonis has it on his forearm.
There you go.
And he crossed the Atlantic on a sailboat.
He did.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I did know that, of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So big trip across Portugal, changed your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure did. Then came back, and then I was like, what am I going to do now? And when I was in Portugal, I just remember this guy. He had an offer for me that I had to refuse, but I thought about it, and the skipper told me I shouldn't do it, but his name was Ramsey, and I did. We went to the Azores in Portugal, and he was dealing drugs. So he had a boatload of drugs on his vessel. When we pulled into port in São Miguel, I think it was, or Horta, when we pulled into port, we had to moor up beside him because there was no more ports left for us. There was nowhere left for us to moor, and so we just pushed our boats beside him, tied up, and then we became friends, and he played guitar, and we had a good time together, and then he, I stayed there for a couple weeks, and then he offered me a deal. He knew that I was green, and I was just starting to travel. And he knew that if he offered me a free trip to Europe in return for bringing $10,000from the United States to Europe for him and doing a drop-off, then he'll give me a free trip to Europe, he said. And I was excited. You know, I thought, man, that's easy. I can take $10,000 and drop it off and then get a free flight and get a free whatever, you know, probably a couple $1,000 out of the deal. And then I went to tell the skipper, and the skipper, Dr. Martin Brennan, was a skipper, and rest in peace. He said, do you know what's going on here? And I said, well, yeah, he wants me to transport some money. And I was thinking about doing it. And he said, well, you best not do it. I said, why? Because he's got a boatload of drugs. And I said, oh, that's interesting. I was young, right? Naive. And, yeah. And, yes. Yeah, so I told Ramsey I couldn't do it. I actually told him I could do it. And I came back home, and then he called me from a payphone in Amsterdam. And I'll never forget, because after Martin told me this, I got all sketched out and realized it was a drug transaction. And, I told him I couldn't do it and didn't do it. And then I went off to Europe on my own and went backpacking for 2 or 3 months, just traveling and playing music. Came back, and then North River Kayak Tours was born when I came back, because I saw lots of other people doing lots of things like that, and I thought, wow, this is cool. I'm going to do that.
So when did you start North River?
I think in 94.
Okay.
30 years ago.
Yep.
It's the 30th this year, isn't it?
Yeah, 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny how a lot of stuff kind of gets inspired from traveling, I guess, abroad, right? And then seeing what other people are doing and then bringing it back here, because you can see the potential in it. You kind of get your perspective changes a little bit.
It changes a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Because, you know, I was a green boy. I was naive. Riverview High School graduate, you know, and living in Cape Breton and going to Halifax would be my big trip. And then, you know, all of a sudden you throw on a backpack and you go traveling the world. It opens up your eyes to a lot of things, you know, yeah. like safety, for example. Like, you know, I was naive and, you know, I've got robbed on the road and, you know, I've had a lot of weird experiences on the road that, you know, just mind-boggling experiences, and I live to tell them, and I'm here now, and I've created my kayak tours. I've created my cabins, my music, all based on travel. And based on what I saw and what I did, and I wrote about it when I come home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I got divorced once, and then I wrote about the divorce. I created an album, Beautifully Imperfect.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I do it.
It's for sale right here on the shelf.
Yeah. It's right. Over there. It's over there.
It is.
Yeah, right sure
there.
It is.
That is right there.
Yeah. In our little kayak shop, folks, we're sitting in our kayak shop.
Yeah. We're here at North River. Yeah. North River Kayaks, actual shop. Been here a few times.
Yeah, you've been here more than a few times, Lee.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah.
And Canary as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. The last time I was here was for a DCBA shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a great day that day.
Did you go out?
Did I what?
Do you go out in the kayaks?
No, we came here to shoot the cabins.
Weren't you a supermodel in that shot?
I was a model for that.
Dude, I sent him I saw an ad. It was like a Cape Breton. It was a reel. Oh, where was it? The airport. I was picking up Allie at the airport the other day. And they have like at the carousel for the baggage at the airport in Sydney. Mm-hmm. And they have like a reel that just loops above the carousel, right? And I'm looking at it and I'm going, there's one canary. There's two canaries. There's three canaries. It's like shot after shot after shot. And I was like, oh, now I know why he was told he was banned from being on camera for a while.
Yeah.
Sydney airport. You're a star.
It's the gray hair. It's the gray hair that got me. It was a shoe in for that.
Is that right?
That the demographic. Sandwich demographic, you know?
Yeah, that's funny. That's funny. Now I'm going to look next time I'm flying out of Sydney.
Oh, it's in every, and all the print, you just see the back. There's one picture. It's funny. It's like an ad placement for like all Cape Breton brands. You're wearing one of her t-shirts. So on the back, it says Live Life Intense. And then there's a can of Breton beer and there's a lighthouse and there's something else in it too. And I was like, somebody sent it to me and I'm like, man, this is like a,
so many people messaged me. They're like, you're a liar. You weren't drinking.
You weren't drinking that
yeah,
beer.
Yeah, right. Right.
Like, it's just product placement.
Product placement.
Yeah. I still endorse that. I still endorse Breton Brewery.
Hey, man.
I don't partake in
it. They're good guys.
I still endorse
good,
it.
Good brew. I like them.
Yeah.
The Double Black Angus. Woo. Kaboom.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. We've shared a few Black Angus back in the day.
Yep. Yeah. More than a few.
Dare say.
Jesus. Dare say.
We're not going to go down that road.
No.
So 30 years, what's a plan? Do you got a plan for the 30 year?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I always have a plan, and my plan, it never really seems to come to fruition when I'm planning on some form of retirement, because it's impossible, I found. You know, I was just going to give up and kind of slow down, and now all of a sudden I started this Angelo's Bellows, making fireplace bellows out of recycled pianos, and I built a workshop at my house so that I could build these bellows there. So so all of it, unlike you, you're constantly under construction. And
I don't know. Sometimes I think about it, and I'm like, is this, am I plagued with something? Like, can I ever not be in go mode and just sit there and relax and just let it, you know, ride for a year, two, maybe?
Probably not.
You know, it's like your brain is constantly working. It's like one thing, and then as soon as that's done, it's on to the next. So it's kind of like a horse chasing the carrot, like dangling the carrot in front of your mouth. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, you're a kind of guy who recognizes opportunity, and you're the kind of guy who jumps when it shows its pretty little face.
And, which is not, you know, great.
Well, I mean, you're the guy, you're the, you know, I remember, you know, I mean, I appreciate you for that. I like that you say you're going to do something and you do it. And I'm the same way. I've always done that. I always have done that. And what I do is I kind of trick myself. So if I say something to you, I'm going to do it. But there's a part of me that wasn't even planning on doing it. But if I'm saying it to you, I hear myself say it, and then I actually do it. And I've done that numerous times, like this bellow thing. I started this little bellow factory, and all of a sudden it's like, I better do this because I said I'm going to do it.
Well, if I don't do it now, I'm a liar.
Well, that's right. That's right. That's exactly it, man. Yeah. It's like I do an album. If I record an album, I record albums, and I tell people I'm doing an album. And I don't, I may not have an intention of doing it, but when people ask me, hey, Angelo, what are you up to? And I scratch my head and I can't say nothing. So I go, I'm just working on an album. And then all of a sudden I'm working on an album because I told people I'm working on an album. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, 90% of the time, that's how things work for me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were just talking before. I don't know if it'll make it. I don't know if we're editing that out of this podcast or not, but talking about this film, and we were talking about it in the drive up, right? So this Strawberry Run documentary or film, or what, I don't even know really what it is. It's a film, whatever. But it took like 2 years to finish it, right? So, and I didn't really have a deadline to finish it. It was supposed to be done last spring, and I was picking at it here and there. And then when a friend of mine approached me and asked me to put it in his festival, and it was like a month out. And I said, okay, cool. That'll give me the direction to finish it. And leading up to the project, he would always check in. He'd be texting me every week. He'd be like, did you finish it yet? What's the progress? Did you finish it? Did you finish it?
Yeah.
And then today he was texting me because the cutoff for submitting it, so they can get everything ready for the festival next Sunday, was yesterday. And he goes, thank you for being the only one that submitted like the full request of what they wanted, the bio, the information, the, you know, some people put a film, some people put bios, you know, not the whole request of information package, right? So, and I go, listen, Dave, I'm like, if I said I was going to do something, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And I'll work and I'll not sleep for like 3 days.
Yeah.
Like the documentary that we did, we shot here, what, 4 years ago, 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
The final push, I set a date because that was the only way of having a deadline and having a date to launch it and premiere it. We promoted this premiere, right? And the behind the scenes of that project was basically me pulling like 20-hour days, 18-hour days. In the last, I think, 3 days leading up to the premiere, I went to Anna Ganish, my friend's studio, to mix and master it and color it because my laptop couldn't handle it at that point. It was too much stuff on the shitty little off-the-shelf MacBook Pro. And so I went up and took a bunch of, I don't even know what he has, Adderall or something, and like pulled a 36. I was in his basement studio, and I got there and I go, listen, Smitty. I was like, the only reason to come down and bother me is to bring me McDonald's every 6 hours. Bring me a fucking Big Mac meal. That's
nice.
It.
Nice.
And I'm going to stay down here until this thing's fucking done.
Yeah.
And so we finished it. It was 7 a.m. The Wi-Fi there isn't fiber op, right? So I went to press upload, 7 hours to upload. It was a 9 gigabyte file. So I go, you know what? I'm going to go to bed. So I go to bed. I wake up and I check and it says buffering. I'm like, oh, awesome. I uploaded. So I went back to bed, woke up again, walked downstairs. His computer had crashed his entire system. And so it wasn't buffering. And I was like, fuck, we're due to premiere in like 3 hours.
Oh, God.
So I got in the truck, drove straight to Halifax, had to call friends of mine who had a studio and an office downtown. It was like Sunday or something. I drove into town. Got ordered Chinese on the phone, like takeout, picked it up, went to the studio, pressed upload. I think I was like 15 minutes late.
Yeah.
For the premiere.
Unbelievable.
And I had, you know, there was like hundreds of people waiting to watch it. And people were texting me being like, isn't this thing supposed to premiere now? I'm like, yeah, it's coming. It's coming.
There's a weird thing is like, when you mean to do something and you think about it too much, you get like analysis paralysis.
Bingo. Nice. You know? I never heard that word before, but that is exactly what I don't want.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, when you set forth some deadlines that are not your own, like you are required to meet somebody else's deadlines.
Yeah.
Well, then that kind of gives you some like external motivation to do something rather than overanalyze it and overthink about it.
A lot of people have that, like my wife is a teacher and she has deadlines and she has to hit those deadlines and she's the type of person who hits them, but there's also the type of person who doesn't hit them and can't hit them and misses them. Mm-hmm. You're like Lee and you too, Canary. I mean, you're the same. You're the guy who meets the deadlines and you guys produce really great stuff because of that. And I find that I work best when I'm under that stress, but it pulls out some weird creative energy in me. Probably fear. And I mean, cause I'm freaking out cause I got to get this done. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I get it done and that's the thing. So I think we're all alike in that sense.
The bellows are so cool though.
They're really neat. Yeah. You know, I got to tell you a funny story though. When I first started doing it, I created these fireplace bellows. They're leather, the breather's leather. And then I recycled old pianos. So I got old pianos from 1912 and I took the wood off them and made bellows out of them. So my first prototype, I took my daughter, who's 18 years old at the time, or 18 at the time, I took her to Valley Village and I said, I got to get some leather, but I don't want to pay full price for it. So I went and I got this old red leather dress that somebody must have wore at the main event in Glace Bay for 7 or 18 years. I swear to God, man, it smelled of smoke and booze and everything you could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
And it's still that one Parabello, the prototype, still smells of that. And that's the prototype that I have here at the shop that I'm never going to sell.
Yeah.
But I brought it and then I brought the dress home. And I'm somewhat freshly married and I brought the dress home, this red, like mini skirt, right?
Yeah.
And I gave it to my wife. I said, honey, I bought you a red dress. And I brought it to her and she goes, oh, great. And I was like, and I was just fucking with her like hard, right? But she did not know that. So she goes, well, I said, aren't you going to try it on? And she kind of takes it and she goes into the bedroom and she kind of, you could hear her in there and she's, I'm like, uh-oh. And she comes out and she doesn't have the dress on and she looks at me and she goes, that dress does not fit me. And I said, yes, I know. That's the dress that I'm using to make my fireplace bellows, but I just wanted, and she, I think she used the C word. Anyway, so yeah, anyway, that was my prototype of the bellows and that one turned out to be great and now they're all kind of funky. So that's that.
So where are you? Are they going to be hanging around here?
Or? Yeah, they'll be in the kayak shop. And I did an Instagram. I got an Instagram account called Angelo's Bellows, A-N-G-E-L-O-S-B-E-L-L-O-W.
Yeah, having a good sniff of that main event.
Give it a
smell. Have a whiff of that.
Yeah, you can smell it.
You really can.
That's caked in. I thought
when you could smoke in bars.
That's right. Yeah. Well, that I don't know the history of that those bellows. I mean, the deep history of those bellows. What her name was, or whatever. Or
you should just make up a story.
But
right?
I do know what size she wore. Oh man.
Oh, so you have an Instagram account?
Yeah, I put up an Instagram account for the Angelo's Bellows thing and I think I must be clocking 24 followers now. It's been up for a week. I'm really excited about that.
Thick.
Well,
behind the scenes making.
Well, you know, I just put it up there. I don't expect to be, you know, get any fame from this, but they are cool and they work. They're functional, they're beautiful, and they definitely have a story, all of them. And you know,
you should make whether or not it's real or not, just make individual stories. It's like make them up. Like whole storyboards that go along with each.
I don't even have to with these things. There's when I go to get the piano to recycle out of these people's houses, the stories begin. Like when I went to Bedeck to pull the story out, to pull the piano out, there was a story and I opened up the case, pulled the piano apart, ripped the wood off it. And there's like a date of 1912 inscribed on it. And this is why I called it the 1912 series. And then we got to meet the new people who started a B&B in Bedeck. Learn their story. I'm not going to get into that, but learn their story. Learn why they moved to Cape Breton from Ontario just recently and started a B&B there. Danielle and I went, loaded it onto my truck, drove it to the dump, to the landfill, took the wood off it, pushed it off, and started dissecting the piano at the dump. So you can imagine what people were thinking when Danielle and I are headfirst into a piano, ripping pieces off and salvaging it, right?
You get kicked out of the dump. No, not so, getting kicked off ice climbing. Maybe kicked out of the dump for that.
Not just the story behind like there's the story behind the piano, but there's also the music that went into that piano. Like Reverend Lloyd Murdoch used to own that piano. Mm-hmm. That was in his house. It was from 1912. So what stories did the piano hear? What songs did that piano play? I'm a musician, so I'm intrigued by that whole concept. So now you've got these bellows and they hold a story. They were actually a soundboard. The actual soundboard from the piano is the parts I use. Mm-hmm. So imagine that blows my mind. And what hurt me was seeing people go to dumps with pianos and dump them in the dump. And then that's the end of them, which they take like thousands of hours to build, like a good piano.
There's about three of them, I think. Three of them at my parents' place right now.
Oh, exactly.
Like just they because they don't want to get rid of them.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, no.
I know a guy who recycles those.
Oh, there you go. There's an organ. There's an old organ. There's it still works too.
Just before we did this podcast, I got a text from this girl. I don't even know her, but she says, I hear you're looking for old pianos. And I went, I got one, she said. And I went, wow, this is cool. And no offense to her, but then she started texting me all these other old things that she has. And and I've got an old antique pump organ. Are you interested in this? And I've got this old antique chair. And I said...
So I just want to interrupt for a second. That reminds me. What is the bellow made from in an organ? Felt?
In an organ?
Is it made from...
Like in a pump organ?
Yeah. Because they have bellows in them.
Yes, absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Because you're pumping them with your feet. So yes, it would be, I would imagine, a leather bellow inside. So when you pump your feet, it pumps the bellow, which pumps the air up through the reeds.
Well, might be worth having a look at that organ she got too.
Well, no. After she's, you're setting me up here, aren't you? After you saw the pictures, you might change your mind. Because
they're in rough shape, are they?
I politely said to her, because I appreciated her reaching out to me, that, and I noticed the bottom soundboard wasn't there. And I said, in order for me to do this project, I need the two soundboards. And the bottom one wasn't there, which got me off the hook.
Yeah.
Because she wanted to give these to me. And now I'm getting calls from tons of people saying, I got this old piano. You interested in this old piano? And I'm like, So what I've recently been doing is offering like $50 to people. for the top, the soundboards off their piano. So if anybody listening has a decent piano that's going to the dump that has a nice soundboard, I'm willing to give you $50 for it because I can make, you know, I can make 6-7 sets of bellows out of that.
Nice.
And yeah. It's just the one model, just the one size?
Well, the next series is the buffalo series. So I got a buffalo hide, believe it or not, water buffalo hide from India.
Cool.
I already have it. I already have them cut out. I just have to, and I've got the actual piano because I got the piano now and I got to go to my friend Otis Thomas. Mm-hmm. He has a bandsaw from Alexander Graham Bell that I cut the saw, that I cut the bellows out with. Mm-hmm. Like true story.
Yeah.
Otis mixes fiddles with it and guitars and he lets me use it to cut out the bellows. So, yeah, so I'm going to be doing that. And the next series is Buffalo Hide, which is kind of weird.
I just recently saw that Otis has a guitar at Gruen's Guitars.
I saw that, too. I have a guitar that's almost identical to that guitar that Otis made for me. And Otis, I traded my truck for a guitar.
Did you?
Cool. It was a Toyota Tundra. And I said, and Otis's son, Zach, was coming home.
Yeah.
And Zach needed wheels. And I said, Otis, how about we trade my truck for a guitar? And he made me a beautiful, beautiful hollow body guitar.
So did he just do custom orders for people?
Otis does custom orders for people.
But that's all he does primarily? It's just custom stuff?
That's enough to keep him going because he's got a year wait list. Everybody wants a fiddle.
Well, that was my next question. Yeah, if he had a wait list. Yeah.
Big time. Yeah. Everybody wants an Otis fiddle, a guitar, a harp, a mandolin. The guy's a genius. He's a mentor to me. Since I was a kid, he's always been very kind to me and helped me out and gave me direction in life when I needed it.
Yeah, I was, what's his name? Clay?
Clay Carmichael.
Yeah, so he used to buy lumber from my dad, a lot of birch and maple for making fiddles.
Mm-hmm.
And my girlfriend's parents were living in their Airbnb they rented it for a year. And I don't think I ever met him prior to that. So, and then we got talking one day and he says, oh, I know your father. I'm like, huh? How do you know him? Oh, I make fiddles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh. And so he was showing me his process and it's pretty neat. I mean, over this side, you've got Otis and you've got Clay and,
yeah. Dave Papazian's up in the North Shore, not far from here. Yeah, another legendary fiddle player person, like wild man, Dave Papazian. Paul Cranford's up in the North Shore.
Yeah.
Also legendary, also wild man.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. This side of the island, man, it's breeding. I mean, people are gravitated towards it for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I'm here for a reason. And a lot of other people are moving here now for a reason. It's just got some magical powers to it. You know, I've been coming here since birth and I can't tell you how I feel when I'm here sitting in this exact location I am now. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be anywhere else on the planet except at a Willie Nelson concert in Hollywood, California.
Yeah, you are going to Willie Nelson, eh?
I'm freaking out, man. I'm going to see Willie Nelson in he's playing a 2-day concert on Saturday and Sunday in the Hollywood Bowl in California.
So cool.
And there must be a big lineup for that, eh?
The lineup is ridiculous.
Huge. Yeah,
huge. It's like Norah Jones, Lyle Lovett, Snoop Dogg, the Avett Brothers, the Lumiere's, is it?
Yeah,
Lumiere's?
Yeah.
Like, Ophelia. That's, is that them? Who sings Ophelia?
I don't know.
Don't look at me.
The Lumineers.
Yeah, Lumineers. So anyway, there's like 40 different acts playing that are just mind-bogglingly good. So
yeah,
I got seats. I'm going with Mike Vann, the same guy I ice climb with and the same guy who does all my design work and my best pal. And we're going off and we're going to be in California for a week.
Guess I should have got my orders into him first.
For what, the bellows?
No, I need to get some signs.
Well, Mike is on a hiatus, everybody, for a week. Okay, so he's leaving on Wednesday.
That's all right. We're not going to bug Mike.
No. Mm-hmm.
No.
They're the last on my list to do. So, anyways.
Yeah, so anyway, yeah, Willie Nelson's on the list. I also wanted to bring up something. I was thinking about you coming here today, and I was thinking about when I first started my kayak business. Say 25, I started it 30 years ago, but about 25 years ago, I was kayaking up the coast on the west side of Cape Breton Island. Mm-hmm. I was coming up into Paulet's Cove and I come up and there's these three or four young boys at the age of probably 14 or 15 years old, no shirts, cut off pants, no shoes, and just a pair of shorts, sitting in the sun, bleach blonde hair. One of them was Peter LeBlanc.
Yeah.
Bleach blonde hair. The other one was Lee Fraser. And they're sitting there with sticks and a hook and a fishing rod and a worm, and they're catching fish because they have no food, and they've been into Paulet's Cove for 5 or 6 days. We kayak in with a group of about 12 people or 10 people. I was guiding a trip with my guide, and then we went up and did a trip along the west coast to Cape Breton, and there's Lee. First time I ever met him, he was about 14 years old. And he had this tent. It wasn't a tent. It was a bunch of tarps, and it was set up like the Hilton. They were much more elaborate than our tents. And there was different little cubby holes in them, and you could crawl through and get into the next tent. And they were there for a week. Yeah. They ran out of food when we got there. And they were very friendly to us because we had an abundance of food and alcohol.
We're living off of, we used to go in with a bag. I used to take a 1-pound bag of beans. That's exactly
what you had.
That was it. And if we were hungry, we'd boil those beans and eat those beans. And everything else we'd have to eat. So it'd be trout, it'd be mackerel, we're out fishing mackerel. And then we made these, we found jerry cans on the beach. And we made, swam those out to that rock that's off the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Went down, we found bait bags, jig perch. Put perch in bait bags and baited crab, and crab will go inside the bucket, and we go down and pick it up and take it out and eat the crab. Snails, blueberries from Bald Mountain, all kinds of stuff.
See, that's my first encounter with you, Lee Fraser. Mm-hmm. First time I met you.
That's so wild.
There's a picture, and he has a picture of it.
I do.
Peter has a copy of it, and I've been meaning to try to get him.
Can you get it and then post it on your Live Life Intense site so that people can see that picture? Because it was phenomenal. And I took it from my kayak as I'm coming by.
OG photo. Yeah,
we were sitting there, right?
No, it's cool.
We're sitting on the kayak, and we're just like dirty. Hadn't showered, been living off of like shit on the beach, right? Just and full of campfire. And I remember somebody was like, "What is that coming?" Oh, it's kayaks. We were, 13, 14, 15. And Angela pulls up and he's like, "Boys, I got a surprise for you." And it was like a whole group of girls our age. Like a whole class trip coming in for like the night. And we're like, oh my God. And we've been in there. We're like these, young
beauties,
men,
country bumpkins.
Like,
God. Well, what did they think when they pulled in? Like, I mean, that's what I'd like to know. When they saw like 3 or 4 half naked young boys, and then there's all these young girls coming out on a trip and they see you guys. I mean,
yeah, we wouldn't even know what to do.
Yeah, I know, but like, it was fun now talking about it and shit.
Yeah,
but I remember we had a lot of leftovers, so we were feeding you guys. Remember, we were coming over, and you also did a balancing trick on a stick on a rock, and you were doing these balancing tricks. And Mike Vann actually did it. I couldn't do it. Whatever you were doing, you had some weird balancing trick that you learned in the 5 days that you were hanging out in
Paulet's Cove. I don't even know, man.
Peter would remember exactly what that was.
Yeah.
Oh, listen.
Peter's like an elephant.
Yeah.
I have a picture of Peter in Paulet's Cove with, he is like a leaf, like a bough of a tree. He was sunbathing, right?
Yeah.
And we're at the bottom of the hill coming into Paulet's Cove. This is a different time. And I have it at my parents' place. It's just a disposable camera picture. And he's laying there asleep, naked, right? With just a bough on his crotch. And I have a picture, and there's people coming down the hill, into Paulet's Cove. And we had been in there, man, everybody with loincloths and naked and running around. Yeah.
Now, that's another real beauty on Cape Breton is Peter LeBlanc. Like him and Ben.
Yeah man, he's really leaning into the music scene the last couple of years and really doing a lot of he's basically doing all of the bookings for the shows for us this summer.
Yeah.
And because we it kind of clashes when I'm doing something, he's doing something. I just said, Peter, man, your ears to the ground on the music scene here. You just I'm looking for this style. So if it fits our style, here's the dates that I'm looking for. And
he's got such a great taste in music too. And he's really in tune to the folk kind of singer songwriter, duets.
Yeah. He does have good taste and I love going to his concerts and I love the setup. I mean, it's so grassrootsy, homegrowny, organic-y.
It's in the middle of his organic farm. It's literally garden next door. There's hay bale bathroom over there.
You know,
the sheep. sheep running around.
Exactly. Yeah. It's fun. And then you've got little kids and then you've got like senior citizens all in the same room and they're all having a ball and they're all getting along with each other. And that's what I love about his events.
The last one I went to there, the peepers were so loud. It was like somebody was playing a track of them through the PA. Like, it was so cool sitting there watching the show and then all of the frogs behind you. Like,
unbelievable.
Yeah. I'm waiting for his, he usually does a big concert in the spring doing seedlings and stuff. Mm-hmm. Right? So I'm waiting for that. That'll be coming up in the next month, probably sometime in May.
Yeah.
And that's the one, I think, was that when you're talking about when the peepers were out? Was when they were doing like at the greenhouse and they're selling seedlings and stuff? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I usually just go up. That's where most people, like most of my friends, will go and get all their starters for the garden.
Yeah.
Yeah. Won't even bother with it. He does it. He, oh, man. Should have seen his greenhouse that he built there. I remember when he's putting the screw piles in and I showed up and he did like, you can buy those Pilex screw piles from Home Depot and put them in by hand. And he was putting them down through like, it was like gravel and rock. I remember getting out and he goes, don't look over there. And of course I look and they're coming out at like 45 degree angles or all over the place. You never know looking at the building, but it was absolutely hilarious. He goes, these goddamn things. I can't believe tall guy talked me into getting them.
Oh geez. And there's another doozy, tall guy. I mean, all of these characters on the island, like you guys and all of the people in the island that make up the island. I often think about those people and think how lucky we are to be surrounded by them. You guys live like an hour away from me. You live in one direction, an hour away. You're an hour in another direction, and I'm here in an hour away. And we're not that close. If you were in any big place or big city or something-ish, you would never fucking know who is an hour away from you. I mean,
it's funny that you say that because you would never know who is 70 kilometers away from you, but an hour in a big city is only 10K. Right?
Like, never thought of that.
To drive across Mississauga, which is 25 square kilometers, would take you an hour.
Okay.
Right? Or like to drive from Calgary to Airdrie, which is the next town, it would take you an hour.
Okay.
So you might not know anybody in Airdrie. But even still, is like it's only 15K away, right? But that's what kind of makes this place kind of cool. Is like some people that have stayed here their whole the most of their lives will be like, oh my god, I'll never drive to Glace Bay. Glace Bay's 20 minutes away.
Exactly.
It's like 26 kilometers.
Listen, when when it took you 40 minutes like us to drive to the liquor store every Friday, just like one way, you know, you get used to driving.
Yeah.
And it used to be, that was the adventure is going for a liquor run after high school.
And like part of this place too is like, it's really exciting to drive across the island and like see you or see Lee or see Tall Guy or see Bryson. It's like, you know, like the linking up with like a meeting of the minds of all the rigs on the island is kind of what's makes it fun, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And then that connects the rigs to the other rigs. Like Bryson, I didn't know Bryson until I came through your channels, I think.
And there's a whole big rig network.
So now I know a bit about Bryson and now I'm like, wow, like really that's, he's probably top 10 wild guys on Cape Breton Island, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's one of the bigger rigs east of Montreal, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Holy macaroni, eh?
Yeah, we were going to head up. That was kind of a plan, but we'll get him again on this podcast because it was the last time we did it, man. It was, when he was on here, he's just like, I think the sound effects alone were worth doing another episode.
Yeah.
Oh my God. He was telling a story about, it's funny when you talk to Bryson, when you go to the hostel, right? And you talk to him. And he tells these crazy stories and you think that he's bullshitting you, right? You're almost like, there's no way that this is 100% true. There's some false information in this story somewhere, right? Like the helicopter story.
And then you go on YouTube and see
And then he goes, oh, you can see it on YouTube. And I look it up and verbatim, it's what happened. And I'm like, how does this guy have so many of these stories?
Yeah.
Imagine he's doing the commentary. What was it for was it longboarding?
Or they're doing like in Colorado, they're going down, is a downhill course. Yeah. Yeah.
And the helicopter crashes behind them.
Look out, she's going to blow.
Yeah. And it was a TV show. It was like the world's vacation horrors or something like that. Yeah. And I found the clip and I watched it and I sent it to Canary. I'm like, holy shit, this is verbatim. Yeah. The guy and the photographer that was in the helicopter landed and he's trying to like pull his camera off while this helicopter is like on fire. And
you can YouTube it, folks. Yeah. Yeah. What would you YouTube? Bryson told me what it was, but
you'd probably do Colorado.
If you go back to our previous podcast episode, he says it in
Yeah, but I put it in the show notes too.
Is it?
Yeah, there's a link in the show notes.
Yeah, perfect, because you got to see it. It's hard to believe, really. Yeah, I mean, come on. Yeah,
because I had to Google like the show name and then helicopter or something like Vacation Horrors or some shit like that, and then it's Bryson sitting there, just a younger version of Bryson.
But
so Angelo, do you got any plans for the spring? You got anything going on here at the cabins? Your bellows?
Yeah, we got some neat things happening. We got a Women in the Wild weekend happening, which is the third annual. The first two sold out. That went cuckoo. So we get groups of four women per cabin. We've got five cabins, so a total of 20 women. Mm-hmm. And it's all very, very female-based. Our guides are girls. Our cooks are girls. Well, Brian Picard's not a girl, but Brian. Sorry, Brian. Brian's cooking. We've got Alicia. We've got Yvette coming down to play music. Brian Picard to come do the cooking. Danielle and I are doing the outdoor wood-fired pizza on the first night. Nice. We've got a kayak tour. We've got the cabins. We've got the bonfire. We've got a hiking tour. We've got an outdoor mentor coming to do a walk with up to the Small Falls and the Hemlock Forest.
Yep.
It's going to be, that's a ball, and that's in September. That's fun. And then also in September, just a couple of weeks before that, I'm bringing in Ray Bonneville. Mm-hmm. I don't know if y'all know Ray Bonneville, but he is a phenomenal blues singer-songwriter, a Juno Award winner. He's in his 70s. He's coming here to play on the patio deck over the water over there.
Nice.
Last time Garrett Mason was here playing. Now we got Ray Bonneville coming down with Jeff Arsenal. Brian Picard's also catering that one.
Nice.
And there's going to be a lot of fun stuff happening. There's only 30 tickets left, and this is for a concert in September. There's 30 tickets left, and I put it out a week ago. And we're doing that. I'm going to hang out here. We've got new staff. We got Naomi Yonder down here. We got Francois Beauvais coming back, which is a really great guy. He's been with me 3 years. Mm-hmm. Katie Trim might come back and do a few shifts. Danielle and I are going to be doing shifts. So we got five people. And then Christine up at the cabin. So we got like six people rolling here.
Nice.
Full tilt all summer.
Sick.
It's great, man. You come down, check it out. And it's a cool spot.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We'll be down.
It's fun.
All right, time for dinner.
Ring the bell. I got dinner in. I put dinner in the little oven. My mother's manicottis. They're cheese manicottis, and they're in the toaster oven right now for you guys. Well, now that's hospitality.
Thanks very much, Angel. Thanks for having us here.
My pleasure.